I like the small start. Let's just do this.
Yeah, fuck it, we're the Experience Grind.
Hey, hello everybody, welcome to the Experience Grind podcast. I am your lovable host, Kyle.
And I'm your slightly less lovable co-host, Ryan.
I think you're a pretty lovable guy. I like you, all right.
You're very generous.
You're a swell fellow, a swellow fellow. No, but it doesn't mean you swallow. That I really should have.
I'm a swellow fellow who likes Othello while eating
You like Othello like Laurence Olivier in Othello? Have you ever seen Othello?
I've not seen Othello. I've read the book.
I've not even read the book.
So I hope it's Shakespeare? I think it's Shakespeare.
Joke. Who knows, man? Old Billy?
Old Billy.
Shakespeare?
Old Billy.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Experience Grind podcast. So, yeah, that's what we do.
talk about nothing.
This is the truest example of what the podcast is. Yes, we ramble about nothing here.
Mm-hmm.
It varies week to week, whether it's going to be movies or video games.
Yes.
You movie heads, this is a movie-related one. So
this is a movie week.
You have won the lottery there. The movies this week are Scott Pilgrim vs. the World and
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
These are our third favorite movies.
That is right.
We're really tearing down this list here. We're making good speed. And we're just going to keep going here. We're going to take this time to call out a little bit of a sponsor here. We'd like to say that we are freshly picked up by our great sponsor, the lovable Andre California Champagne.
Specifically from their signature collection.
Yeah, it's signature. It's very fancy. Fancy, not with a Y, but with an I-E and that little thing over the E. That's also in the Andre logo. Is it not a tilde?
What is it?
I don't know.
An accent note. I think it's just an accent note.
Sure, we'll go with that. But yes, so, Andre.
Yes.
California Champagne. Thank you for picking us up for sponsorship. It's what makes this podcast doable.
It's the best sparkling wine I've had. And I'll tell you what, I think it's very fresh with notes of pear and lemon. I've noticed. And I didn't just read from the bottle.
No, he did not. He is a champagne connoisseur.
Champagne.
He's also I believe the phrase is a sommelier. That means he's very fancy about his champagnes and wines.
It is.
Boy, the French are going to hate this episode.
I had to stifle myself right there to just be
you just hate
outright
French
disrespectful
so
and just be like, fuck the French, yeah, man.
Well, fuck the French anyways. I mean,
let's close off nations.
I like the people that get upset. Like, they're like, man, fuck France. And they're like, they're also some of the most patriotic people in the world. It's like,
I don't understand that, yeah.
America would not exist without France. They saved our asses and gave us this country, pretty much. We would be nothing without France. So fuck you, idiots. Learn some history. Go France. Thank you.
Yeah.
Omelette du fromage. So let's get into this shit, because we are rambling already.
That was beautiful.
I liked it. It was a good intro. I think we've had none better yet.
That's fair. Okay.
So we've had this question posed. I'll break this down. What we like to do is throw out a question and have each of us answer it. And that humanizes us, these mysterious, unattached voices that you listen to. It lets you get into our heads a little bit. Figure us out, even just that more minute. Man, I'm on a French kick. I don't get it.
I know. It's freaking me out, man.
I want to ask this question to you, Ryan.
All right.
And it was presented to us by our lovely sound engineer.
Lovely, genius, patient.
He's very lumberjack-esque tonight. You're looking very beautiful over there, Andrew.
He is.
he's ready to go cut down a tree, I tell you, right after this.
We got the thumbs up.
So his question posed to us that we will not answer on the air. We have not thought about this or discussed it with each other.
No, not at all.
Is, what is your favorite adaptation of a movie? No, of a TV show
into
to
a movie.
Yes.
So a movie from a TV show.
Correct. So
I think the best one is Serenity from Joss Whedon off of the TV show Firefly.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's an adaptation so much as a continuation / ending.
Yeah, it's a conclusion
that it never
that
got.
People got. That's what I've heard. I'm as big a dork I am. I'm not a Firefly guy, not by choice.
Yeah.
I've just not exposed myself to it yet, despite all the great ravings I've heard from it. I do want to. It's on the list, but that list grows more and more every day. So, I don't know. I do plan to get to it, hopefully. I know it should be right up my alley. It's a space cowboy.
Yeah.
It's
a space western that's written incredibly, it has such witty, smart dialogue that you would expect from Joss Whedon. And
it's got Nathan Fillion.
Who's great.
Who I like. Adam Baldwin, who I like.
Chiwetel Ejiofor, who was in 12 Years a Slave. You would know him.
Is he the preacher guy?
No, he's not the preacher guy. He is the villain in the movie. He was
okay. Oh, so we're still talking about the movie.
The movie. Yeah, well,
And Serenity, the movie, like, I've seen, like, bits and pieces of everything related to this, but I've never sat down and experienced it. Hey, there's a callback to the name of the show. I know in the movie they pick up some little girl that's, like, some kung fu master, correct? And she kicks all kinds of ass.
Yeah.
I like kung fu.
I mean, it's pretty good. The fight scenes are pretty solid, and, to your point of not seeing Firefly, I went into the theater blindly. I never saw Firefly. I just was like, Serenity is a space movie. Let's go see that. Because, I mean, space is cool, right? Yeah. And having not seen any of Firefly, like, I love this movie. And going back, like, I guess I'm in the minority where I think Serenity's better than the TV show. And I don't even think you need to watch Firefly.
Does it stand alone?
Like, it does. It completely stands alone.
You can go into it completely not knowing anything. And it's still a good movie.
I guess you won't feel like the dramatic weight when certain characters die because you had that connection through the series. But like, it is a completely standalone story. Like, it picks up and it tells you everything you need to know going in.
Okay.
And I'd say that's one of the best ones.
Oh, good. Well, I mean, I've not done it yet, but maybe I'm now inspired to check them out, and that'll be a revisit episode.
Yeah, once you do that.
I mean, as big a dorks as we are, we could do a Firefly thing, and it would be good because it's something I've not experienced. So
yeah,
I mean, that could be something we flesh out. You're familiar with it. I am, but we could talk about that. So hey, future show ideas. We're always coming up with
ding,
them.
Ding, ding.
I'll go ahead and interject now. If you have any ideas for us to do anything, please reach out to us on the Facebook, on Twitter, on our website,
experiencegrind.com.
We're on Facebook, Experience Grind Podcast, or even our email.
Yeah. Please send us comments, emails, like whatever. Just let us know what you want us to do.
I mean, I know that both of us separately have people reach out to us individually.
We do.
Do that on a public forum.
Let people see it so you can generate discussion.
Give us our praise or our comeuppance. Like, we're not perfect.
Pretty perfect.
I know, but you gotta have some sort of modesty, unlike the French.
Hey!
Callback!
Yeah! Alright, so what is what's an adaptation for you? Because I had trouble even thinking of an adaptation, let alone a good one.
It's a very weird question because you're not going from movie to TV series. You're going
Which
from
is
TV
usually
series
kind of how it happens.
To movie.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I think the best and the most fun and that captures the thing but turns it around is the first Brady Bunch movie where they bring the Bradys into like the late 90s. That is probably to me the best one, I feel. Do you have a different answer now?
I'd change it now.
We'll get to you after we get to me. Have you seen the Brady Bunch movie?
I do, and I love them. I actually like the sequel, too,
Both really good. Yeah. Because the sequel really harps on the Hawaii episodes in the later parts of the series. But they do so many just fun things that, like, if you are a fan of the Brady Bunch series at all, even if you're not, if you just kind of know what it is, you can enjoy this movie because it just plays up the camp and hits it so hard.
It does. And it's respectful the entire time of the TV series.
Very respectful,
which
but
is
it's
great.
Very tongue-in-cheek. Like, it knows what it is, but it holds no punches. It's very good. It's very well done. It's fun. You can just throw it on. I like that one a lot. And put on the spot, that's what I came up with. So.
That's a good one. I was put on the spot, and I picked Serenity. Though, now that I know it counts, I might go with Wayne's World, because technically based off of TV,
also,
Saturday Night Live.
That's also a very good one.
Wayne's World is pretty great.
Now we could do a whole episode just on these things, because, man, Wayne's World is also very awesome.
Just solid.
It has one of my favorite lines of any movie ever, and it's when they're...
You have to say it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to, because it's the best thing in the world. When they're on the car at the airport, and Garth is like, so, like, did you ever find Bugs Bunny attractive when he would put on a dress and act like a girl bunny? And Wayne goes, what? No! Garth is like, oh, good. Me neither. Like, that whole scene is... Oh, man.
That's good. I love the ex-girlfriend coming to the diner at the very beginning. And she gives him a gift, and Wayne's just like, Stacy, if that's a head in that box, I'm going to be very disappointed.
I like, he's like,
it's a gun rack.
Yeah.
What? A gun rack? Why would I need a gun rack? I don't own guns, let alone a gun.
I don't own a gun, let alone many guns that would necessitate an entire rack. Yeah, Wayne's World.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Mm,
very nice one, too. So are you changing it to
Wayne's
World?
Change it to Wayne's World. Yeah.
I'm into that. Cool. Yeah. We'll still do a Serenity thing, a Serenity Firefly thing at some point.
That's so good.
Very nice, yeah.
You see how I just tricked you to get me to talk about two movies? Oh, you didn't even see it. Sneaky.
I fell for it hook, line, and
sneaky.
Stinker.
We just got our sound pedal in and...
We did not, but we've been making fart jokes all day for an episode that will be coming at a later date, and you will hear about it.
In that episode, you'll probably hear the word fart quite a bit.
Oh, there's so many farts in those series. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, no more teasers.
Let's literally, jump into this literally, there are farts in that series.
Yeah, there are. So, our movies this week were, again, refresher. I watched Scott Pilgrim vs. the World for you.
Yeah.
And you watched...
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yes. Our number three favorite movies.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I compared to our number twos, they are completely different movies. Like, drastically different. Could not be further from each other. So,
yeah.
It's an interesting give and take that we're having with these movies here. And
each one's been so different.
Yeah. But I like it. I think it tells a lot about you and I,
mm-hmm.
what we're picking and what we're going with. And really getting into these movies, I'm seeing flavors of both of us. Like, I see a lot of you in the Scott Pilgrim series. I can see absolutely why you like it. So,
and I can see exactly why you like Fear and Loathing, though I think that might be more of a condemning statement from a person, but I don't mean it that way.
I'll take it what I get. So I'm going to jump off the ledge here. I'm going to go first, and
please,
I'm going to talk about
do.
Scott Pilgrim. So this is Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on the, I don't want to call it a manga, but it has, the way it's delivered, it's a comic book.
It's the same quality, I think.
Yeah, but it's smaller, thicker volumes, and it's a longer story, and there's only mm-hmm. six in the entire thing. And this movie kind of takes elements of the whole series, but Scott Pilgrim versus the World, I think, is the second book, I believe.
It's all of them.
It's
all of the books. It tells the entire story. It kind of jumps off, and instead of doing book six, the last book, because I think production started before that book had finished and was wrapped up, they took a different path.
Okay.
So the book and the movie end completely different, but everything before, like, the Gideon stuff, the mm-hmm. G-Man, who's the final boss of the movie, everything before that is pretty true to the comics.
Okay. So this movie is a big love letter. That is, it is an homage, a love letter to two things, and that is old school video games.
And farts.
And comic books.
Oh,
comics. Not farts.
Nah, that was my second choice. I picked poorly.
You picked this movie. You know it's not farts.
Nah, I knew it.
We'll get into farts later. Get farts out of the brain.
I can't.
It starts off immediately. It's made by Universal, and the Universal theme starts off, and it's performed in an 8-bit chiptune style. I was immediately super into that. I was like, okay.
I think the logo is even pixelated,
The logo is also pixelated. So they're already hooking me on that nostalgia bone thing, whatever is grabbing me. Like,
mm-hmm.
all right, I'm in. And then the next thing that I have, they use the Zelda opening music when the credits come in, that beep, boom, 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 beep, boom, 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 beep, boom, 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 beep. It's more of that just putting it home, like, hey, this is what you're in for.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. I came back in my notes here after watching it. This is the most un-Michael Cera role that Michael Cera has ever had. He really, like, he's not awkward. He's actually kind of a cool, doofy loner guy.
Yeah.
But he's not awkward or standoffish or anything. He really captures a do-nothing early 20s.
I think for main roles, I think you're right, but he was also in This Is the End as somebody very un-Michael
Cera-like.
Yeah,
yeah, but that was more... But
as a cameo.
And he was playing Michael Cera there, but Michael Cera turned on his head, which is a very popular thing to do, like with James Vanderbeek and Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. I don't know if you've ever seen that show.
I have seen this,
I love James Vanderbeek in that show.
I think he's
reason.
The best part of that show.
Absolutely, hands down.
But I agree.
This movie it's so stylistic.
Mm-hmm.
And so slick. Like, everything is just, it gels so fine. Nothing jars you out. Everything is done with, like, this nice purpose and all these homages. There are 8-bit things that pop up. So in the movie, Scott Pilgrim, he's in a band. He's a do-nothing slacker, 20-something.
In Ontario, Canada.
And I thought it was Toronto.
It might be Toronto.
I'm pretty sure it's Toronto.
It's definitely Canada, though.
It's absolutely Canada. And he's going through life not really knowing what he's doing, which almost every 20-something has done at some point in his life. He lives with a roommate who...
Wallace Wells.
Wallace is a great character.
Culkin, Rory Culkin or Kieran Culkin?
He's one
I
of
think
the
it's Kieran Culkin.
He's not Rory, because Rory's the younger one.
That's right.
Science.
So it is Kieran Culkin, then.
And he plays a gay character... But I love the, like, you would never know that it's a gay character at all. It's not stereotypical.
The second movie I have a gay character in, serendipitously, because Gay Perry, and then
and Gay
Walls
Perry is also not
your typical gay character.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I really like. I think I mentioned that in the Kiss Kiss Bang Bang episode, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't know that they're a gay character until somebody's like, oh, hey, yeah, you're a gay guy. Well, I mean, Wallace more because you see him making out with a dude at points, but it's never, it's a realistic gay man. And you don't get a lot of those, especially in entertainment media.
No, I don't.
I like that a lot. They just play it straight, man, which is funny for a So he lives with Wallace, but he owns nothing. There's a scene where, like, he comes home and they're panning to everything and showing. And, like, he doesn't even have a bed. They share a one-room place. He sleeps in the same bed as this gay dude. And there's never any hint, like, that Wallace has ever tried. You know, it's... They go through and they're cataloging everything and they're saying, this is Wallace's. And it's just like these little notes that come up and point and that says Wallace's. And the only thing that is Scott's in the house is his coat that he's hanging up at that exact point in time on the coat rack.
And what you're describing is like the camera editing, which I think is as much of a character in this movie as like any of the actual characters.
Yeah, it's very, this as coming from a comic book, this is the most comic book movie ever been made.
Oh, for sure.
And, you know, Ang Lee tried it when he did his go round of the Hulk. But it,
I got douche chills right there.
I know. It's so heavy fisted the way he does it. And Edgar Wright does it in a way that is, he gets it. He understands this medium. And I never thought that you could bring the two mediums together in the way that he does. They just pop up out of nowhere. Like, just, you know, sound effects, like he's banging his head on a wall and there's thuds that come out as the sound hits too. It's just little touches that reinforce that it's a comic world, but it's set in the real world. And then video games also bleed into this world too. So in the movie, you know, he becomes infatuated with this girl named Ramona Flowers. He has to fight her seven evil exes. At the beginning, Scott continuously says ex-boyfriends, and she corrects him many times.
Exes.
And exes play a big prevalent part in this movie. They're everywhere. When you really look for them, they're everywhere. They're on his coat, on signs.
The X-Men logo, background. Yeah.
Yeah. You cannot... I think there's an X in almost every scene, whether subtly, in the background, whatever. And so they just keep playing with this whole idea. And every time he fights one, it's presented in a different video game fighting style way, to a point that, like, you know, health bars show up, and when he's fighting, sometimes they go into a combo and it's counting up combos on the right side,
or like a giant versus will appear before, or they'll say like fight ready fight,
and they split the screen and they drop the versus in between them.
Then when they die, they turn into gold money, like from
coin.
Mario.
And then he picks, the first time it happens, he's like, oh, neat, coins. And he just starts picking up. Like, Michael Cera is so good in this movie, like as Scott Pilgrim.
I think it's his best role.
I think so, too. And he has so much fun with it. And you can tell that in the movie. Like, I love that he's playing a Rickenbacker bass. I'm pretty sure it's a Rickenbacker. And the reason I know this, and this is something that I wanted to get into you at a later date. Have you ever seen Fully Cooley?
No, I have no idea what that even is.
We are absolutely doing a Fully Cooley show.
Sure. Fully Cooley.
Yeah, but we'll get back to that. We'll talk about it off air, behind the scenes, getting behind the curtain of Mr. Oz here. My notes have Scott Pilgrim penis the world. I drew a penis.
Which I just noticed, being the observant person I am, 20 minutes into a podcast.
I am a 12-year-old man, or a 12-year-old boy in a 31-year-old man's body.
Well, I'm the 12-year-old boy who just giggled at it in the middle of a podcast.
So I've noticed, you know, I've mentioned it before, and I still noticed a constant theme, and it really plays heavy in this movie especially. Mm-hmm. The fucking music, man, is so prevalent. Because, again, Scott plays a do-nothing 20-something. All he has is a band. The music that they play is... Wow. I don't know if they're original composition. I have to imagine they are, and they're just full of energy.
They are, and they are the exact lyrics taken from the comics.
Really?
Because they like write the lyrics in the songs, and then they made songs around those lyrics.
That's awesome.
It's just, it like you said,
so
it's a
well,
love letter to the comics.
It's so good. The Kim character is great. Kim is, she's the
Kim Pines.
Very apathetic girl drummer of their band. Which, by the way, is a fantastic band name, Sex Bob-omb instead of Sex Bomb. I think going on record, the only thing that has ever been named better than Sex Bob-omb is Experience Grind Podcast.
Oh, there it is. There
I named
it
that, people. It's very good.
You took credit, you jerk.
Yeah, that was me. I'm winning this podcast. Still, put another point on the scoreboard for Kyle.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. So, Sex Bob-omb, for those who don't know, a Bob-omb is the bomb enemy from the Super Mario series.
Yeah.
So,
and
there
it,
you are.
It plays prevalent in their, they have a Bob-omb on the bass drum and...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. One of my notes here is that I think one of the reasons I like this movie is that it is so ADD. It is ADD personified. There are things happening constantly, things changing. There will be cuts. There'll be like four cuts within a minute, if even that. Like Scott will close a door and then turn around and he's suddenly outside because he's real distracted once he meets Ramona. And so... things kind of mesh together, everything, and then suddenly he's like talking about how he doesn't want to go to a party, and then suddenly they're walking to this
party. At the party, yeah.
And like a split second cut, and he's like, what, I don't want to be here, what? And he's almost as flabbergasted as we are, like, how did I end up here? And I like the way that plays. It's all in this editing and this
that's Edgar Wright.
He had this crazy vision, and
best editing,
dude. It's insane how he pulled all this off. Because if you watch this movie, and I encourage everybody to watch it if you have not seen this, because just it's insane the amount of cuts and the amount of details that are squeezed into this. And what I like about this movie, I've seen it a couple times. It's one of those that you notice new things each time you watch it.
Yeah, it's a very joke dense movie.
Yeah,
it's like Kyle saying, it's like ADD, but it's also just at any time there's one joke and then there's another sub joke that you might not pick up on.
Mm-hmm.
Or like the jokes happen within the span of like a minute. You might get like five or six really quick jokes while there's like music hinting or referencing to something else. While there's also something in the background, like on the wall that you might not notice. It's just so rich.
And it's deep in callbacks. There are callbacks all the time, even to something that maybe happened just a second ago. They'll call it right back.
Yeah.
Or something that happened at the very beginning of the movie. They're all over the place. I can't say that it's a love letter to this comic book series. Like, it's so well done. I think my favorite villain in the book, my favorite Evil X, is Lucas Lee, who is played by
Chris Evans, right?
Chris Evans.
The also, skater slash movie star.
Oh, man.
He's
that part.
He's so good in it.
He's so smug and just, whatever, kid. Like, just playing up this hammy, good-looking actor guy that knows that's what he is.
He has, like, some of the best callbacks, as you were just talking about. Like, the whole line, like, the next click you hear, that's going to be me hanging up the phone. The next one is my gun.
Yeah.
And, like, he says that more than once. Like, he brings it back, but, like, you're right. He's great.
He knocks Scott Pilgrim down. And the fight choreography, I will go ahead and drop to, is amazing. It's brutal and it's comic book-esque, but nothing bad ever really happens to him. Scott gets thrown through brick walls and stands up, and it's very anime-esque in that.
Yeah, it's like, comic book logic.
Yeah, it's hilarious because he'll get the shit beat out of him, and yet there's never a black eye, never a scratch on his face. Like,
he wets himself at one point.
Yeah.
Is it raining or did I wet myself? It's not raining.
But I like when he's fighting Lucas Lee and he gets his ass beat. And then he stands up because he wants to fight him. He's like, hey, get back here. And he goes up and he turns the dude around and it's his stunt double. And then his whole stunt crew shows up and he's like, yeah, you got to deal with that. And he's walking over and you hear the fight
going
on. While
he gets blazed in my Winnie.
Yeah, he's going to get blazed in his Winnebago. And then I think I mentioned this in Mega Man, maybe. And maybe also, I really hemmed it up when we were talking about Dark Souls.
Mm-hmm.
That like a lot of the Dark Souls, even the normal enemies that are hard to fight, they're very like a Greek myth in that they have a weakness that you can exploit.
Mm-hmm.
All of the bosses or all the evil exes also have a weakness that Scott exploits to beat them. He doesn't beat them through ham-fistedness.
Alright, so there's seven evil exes, and I've never thought about this right now, but do you think their deaths and weaknesses are modeled after the seven deadly sins? Because there's like pride, there's lust, because a girl literally explodes by orgasming.
Yeah.
And that's how she's defeated.
By touching, but...
For those who are offended by our Antichrist discussions, we're going to be talking about females dying by orgasm in this one.
That female, by the way, is played by Anne.
It's not maybe.
It's not maybe. It is Anne from Arrested Development. I love that. I wish they would have done an Arrested Development callback just for us super fans.
I wish.
Just to break that fourth wall down even more.
But it would have been such a small thing, too.
Yeah.
All you'd have to do is, like...
Her?
Her?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That would have been perfect.
Or Michael Cera looks at Ramona like, what, was she funny or something?
Yeah. Either one of those. Either one of those. Like, people wouldn't necessarily get it, but the Arrested Development super fans would be like, ah!
Which this movie already plays like a very small percentage of the population anyway. So you may as well just go for it with that minutia.
I like that, but I never really put it that way, but they did all have a weakness that had to be exploited. Like,
this is just something I've never thought about, but Seven Sins, Seven X's,
Lucas Lee is the prideful. He gets to him by his pride. He says, do you think you could do a thingy on that rail? And he's like, you mean to grind, bro? Yeah. So he gets him to do it, and he speeds up to a point where he can't stop. And
in fashion, they do like the combo meter like in Tony Hawk as he's going. And
it keeps picking up. Yeah. And then... He beats the girl. Her weak spot is the back of her knee.
Well, and this is like, you say Lucas Lee's your favorite. I think this is one of my favorites because the fight is so creative because Michael Cera Scott refuses to hit and fight a girl because they're pretty. So what happens is Ramona has to move Scott to fight against the girl villain.
She fights her.
She does.
She steps in. She pulls this giant hammer out of her little pocketbook. I like that touch. I like the Ramona Flowers character. I didn't really write many notes about her. Man. You know, I
crush on her so bad.
And I wouldn't normally. Like, I don't think she's pretty, but there is this air about her that I get what you're saying.
We were talking about types of girls. This is my type of girl. Yeah. This does it
for
me.
The standoffish.
This weird standoffish, kind of too cool for school girl.
Yeah.
That hooks me in hook, line, and sinker every time.
She plays that up. Like I said, I'm not super into that, but like the attitude she brings, I am into that. I don't know why, but I also feel it. I'm like, wow, she kind of rocks this whole thing.
Yeah.
Like it comes together, and the credibility to the actress, because I think she really pulls that through.
Yeah, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, she's a great underused actress.
Yeah, she's really good as Ramona Flowers. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I noticed, I said each ex has their weakness.
Mm-hmm. And each ex fight is so drastically different. Like, you might have heard just from the two we've talked about, but there's, like, one that's, like, this Indian Bollywood dancing fight. Like,
that's the most fight-fight-esque. It's like they present it like a fighting game.
It is.
There's a couple of music battles, which are also very up there on my favorites list. When he fights the new boyfriend of his former girlfriend, Envy.
The other bass player.
Yeah.
Who's a vegan.
They have a bass off, and he beats him by convincing him to drink half and half milk in his coffee. He's like, actually, this is the soy milk, but I thought really hard about putting it in this cup because that guy can read his mind. And so Scott...
Because vegan just makes you better than everybody.
Of course.
It gives you psychic powers. And
then the vegan police show up and take his powers.
That's why I love this movie, because we are having a conversation about a vegan being psychic who gets his powers taken away by the vegan police who show up. And they're like, it's Tom Jane.
I don't know the other.
It's Eddie something. He pops up in all the Guillermo del Toro movies. But God, I love just how off the wall this movie is.
It is so out there. And again, I get that would be the one correlation I think both of our movies this week have is that they are very niche.
They are not for
everybody.
Yeah.
Like, I can see easier how this one got made than mine.
I think because it was riding the superhero wave, but I think I think it tanked at the box office.
I don't think it did very well at the box office. It's got a cult following now.
As it should.
It also has, in my opinion, the best movie tie-in game that I've ever played.
One of the best. I don't know if I could say right off the top that's the best, but Scott Pilgrim versus the World, the video game, is amazing.
It's an 8-bit. That's actually, I think it's 16-bit. 2D side-scrolling beat-em-up, which you can play co-op with a friend.
Mm-hmm.
I would really like to do an episode on this game. I think we would have fun with it. Yeah. But
sadly, I don't think it's a 4-player, which I wish it was. The online issues with that game are a little...
I'm sure.
You had to pay for DLC to play online, which was kind of shitty.
That's
kind of shitty.
I agree. But we can get into DLC practices in a whole other episode, because that can be a full one, because they're all so dumb. When, you know, video game companies are, of course, going to listen to you and I about it.
They are.
Yeah, yeah. We have their ear. I love the battle against the twins, too. It's another giant music battle where they're
Kutanagi twins.
They're in a battle of the bands, and so Scott's band is set up on one stage, and the twins are on the other, And when the twins play their music, these giant snakes come out and attack Scott and his band. And then Sex Bomb, when they play, eventually they bring a giant Yeti out that fights them.
Yeah.
And it's all happening on top of this crowd. And I'm sounding like a madman describing this, but that is exactly
what's happening.
It's like this
weird neon outline that fights from the sonic waves their music makes.
Yeah.
I tried to help make it sound more realistic and grounded, but that I don't think that
helped.
It's
a really fun this movie, again, you pick very fun movies, and they're very bright,
yeah,
and they're fun. And
let's see if that remains true once we get to like Eternal Sunshine.
We'll
That's
see.
Not a fun movie.
It has point, but it's also very bright. But
it is.
This movie, again, it's just, it's a lot of fun. I don't really have anything bad to say about it other than I think the one issue it does have is it starts to get pacing issues as it goes on.
Interesting.
Just, it does start to drag as you get towards, you know, you kind of want it to conclude. And then the whole Gideon thing, it's like he fights Gideon and then he like respawns, he's in the desert and then he fights him again. And it's just, it's just a bit weird pacing. It's not bad, but it can kind of drag. Because at this point,
it's a different kind of pacing than
normal. Yeah, and
movie.
You're ready for it. You're ready for it to be end, and then Nega Scott shows up, and I love when Nega Scott shows up because again,
you do it so well.
You think it's going to be this big battle between the two of them, and then they're just walking out, and he's like, "All right, yeah, man. Well, let's get coffee next week." And Nega Scott's like, "All right, yeah, cool."
They just totally bonded instead of fighting. Because
they're the same fucking person. Yeah. So they're just
as
like,
how it would be.
Yeah, they're just like, "Oh yeah, cool." As not for everybody, but for a Scott Pilgrim, he's going to make friends with his exact body double person. Like,
yeah.
And that was a nice touch. I guess my last one, he says that they keep talking about the L word, and he says lesbian, and then
the other one.
He says lesbians. And they said, no, the third one. And then this callback comes later.
It's not a trick, Scott. I wasn't trying to trick you. It's love.
What? And I think this should be, so I will probably say it to you from now on, and I will probably drop it to my lovely girlfriend, Mandy, too. But he calls it back, "I'm in lesbians with you." He's like, "I'm in lesbians with you." It's just one of those other little callbacks that was one of my favorites. I wrote that one down.
That's
so,
a good one.
Yeah,
I don't think I could make like a quick list to talk about on the podcast of all my favorite lines from this movie.
There's a lot.
There's just so many.
And again, I'm going to have the same problem when we're into the next movie, because, man, I could just... I was watching it last night, and I'm sure I was driving Mandy nuts. So, before we get into that, I think I'm done here with Scott Pilgrim. It's a good movie.
I'll have a little rebuttal after you're done.
I almost want to move Pan's Labyrinth up, drop Drive, and add this as my number 5. I did enjoy it that much. But maybe we'll do a whole list revisit.
Who's winning the podcast now? Who got some points?
You're not winning. You've got points.
I got points. I'm on the board. It's not a shutout.
But I'm not fully ready to commit to that yet. I want to watch Drive again, too, and see how it's
going to
hold up.
Oh, no, you're Scott Pilgrim on the verge of a relationship, not ready to commit.
Yeah. To Knives Chow. We didn't even mention Knives Chow. But the one,
I love
if
all
you're,
of that.
I know some people out there are listening to this, and they are trying to maybe somewhat follow our advice. And if they are, watch Scott Pilgrim
Please.
If you haven't. It's very fun. Ryan has a great recommendation in this one.
It's very nerdy, though.
It is it's incredibly nerdy. It's going to hit that nerd thing very hard.
It's one of the most nerdy referential things you'll ever watch. And Kyle, I think you said earlier something about the style is very consistent through, and it is. And you will know within like the first 5 minutes if this is your thing or not. So it's like it's a zero risk investment. Within that first 5 minutes, you'll know if you're on board. And if you are, you're going to have a great time.
I can't imagine anybody who listens to this has not seen this movie.
That's true.
All the people I know that do listen to it are very...
I think there might be some moms listening.
I think most people are in our level.
Yeah.
And
I
would have to imagine everybody. But if you have not... You should absolutely see this movie. I recommend it.
Absolutely.
I know Ryan does too. So.
Oh, so hard.
I mean, you know, we like to go for conflict on this show sometimes, but I can't conflict with this one. It's a great pick, man.
Well, thank you. Very well
done.
I like to have a movie that you are just completely on board with.
Yeah.
Okay. So just a little wrap up about the pacing at the end. Just a little trivia for you guys. So I told you like the end of the book completely differs.
I would like to know.
I hate the end of the book.
Really? Okay.
It was my biggest disappointment. I read through the whole book series before the movie came out, and I was really disappointed. It ends up with Scott getting nobody, and just realizing he's better off kind of by himself.
That's very weak.
Right? It kind of undermines the entire book. So I really, really love what they do at the end, because like the Gideon fight and all that, that's represented in the book. I think there's a lot more existential desert stuff in the book, which I was not as big of a fan of, because Ramona left him for good. But I like the end here. It's very subtle. It's not a big happy ending. It's just like, hey, do you wanna go get lunch sometime or go out for whatever?
At the end, Ramona is walking away, and Knives, his former girlfriend, is like, hey, idiot, go get her.
Yeah, I think Ramona kind of leaves them too, because they're bonding after having come together to fight Gideon to help Ramona. So you're kind of left with the idea, well, maybe Scott's going to get back with Knives. But yeah, you're right. Knives says, like, you idiot, like, go get the girl. And it's not like a Hollywood moment. It's very underplayed.
Yeah, well, and they leave it over. Like, it's not perfect, but hey, they're going to try
anyway.
They've been through this. Like, let's see what happens.
It might not work.
Yeah.
But it's worth a shot.
I
like that. I don't like the it's going to be great forever ending. Yeah. And I don't like the sad sack shit ending where like everybody loses. I think this is like the perfect middle ground. Yeah.
It's a good movie. So
it's great. Also, stick past the Dev Patel scene. The first boss, Laura, my wife, was about ready to jump ship over
it's
the singing, dancing Bollywood
Mandy
actor.
Mandy was too. Mandy did not like, she's like, is this going to fucking end?
Yes. And I think that throws a lot of people off guard. It is so true to comics, almost to a fault, because I think it's a very specific thing that if you're on board, you're going to love it, but it goes on for a little while.
Yeah.
Stick past that first boss fight.
I like it, it's but really yeah, good. I can see, just watch it. Just watch it, people.
Please watch it.
Let us know what you think about it. Reach out to us on public forums.
Am I wrong?
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Is this a shit movie? Do you love it? Please tell me. Come on. Is Kyle wrong for taking Drive out of his list and putting this in?
We might be. He might be.
Please tell him. Tell us. Experience us. Experience you.
God, that was awful.
That was, yeah.
Oh, man.
Never going to live it down.
No. So there we go. So that's wrapped up. That's Scott Pilgrim.
I think we both thoroughly recommend it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's get into this one.
All right. Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. This is such a different movie.
Wow.
Than
yes.
Scott Pilgrim.
Let's take just a second and let's
take a breath.
Because this is a fucking way different movie.
It is. But I will say, much like Scott Pilgrim, I think it's a very fun movie.
It can be very fun.
It's also very fun, except for like one part, which I'll talk about later.
This movie, it's very fun. And then it gets so dark and heavy, like
real quickly, like on the turn of a dime.
And then it'll turn it right back around and we're back to, hey.
Yeah.
So, go.
All right. I've seen Fear and Loathing before. It's not my first time. In college, like this was in the time where it's like, hey, Fight Club's out. Have you seen Fight Club? Let's share this. Have you seen Seven? Yeah, it's an awesome movie. And like you're sharing all these movies. I got shared Fear and Loathing. I did not like it the first time I saw it.
It's one of those. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's one that you are not going to really like the first time you see it because it is so different. It's not, there's no narrative structure to it really. There's no like, Act 1, Act 2, Act 3 is one long drug trip that is just one act.
Mm-hmm. Takes place over 4 days?
I think so, yeah.
I believe it's
and
three
really,
or four.
I would even say like it's not even important. This is a movie that the story doesn't matter. It really doesn't. It's one of the weaker elements, and I think when I first saw it, I was like, that's bad filmmaking because there's no story. Because I was a dumb college kid, of course, but I've gone back to it several times because my mother-in-law really likes it, so I've seen it at her house several times.
Wow, go her.
I know, right? It's a weird choice. I
would
have never pegged that. But she's watching, she's like, I love Fear and Loathing. I was like, huh, okay, I will say.
On the list especially, and I think maybe of all, I think I've seen this movie more than anything.
This is the one you've seen the most, huh?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm almost positive. I've seen this movie so many fucking times, and I never get tired of it. I was watching it, like I said, last night with Mandy, and dude, I was quoting this entire thing, and I was just happy, and I was popping. I was like, oh, this part's coming up. Oh, there it was. Yeah. I was so excited about things that I know are going to happen.
Yeah. So, all right. So, it's I don't even know how to describe
this
movie. This
movie's going to be very hard to describe. And I think rather than, like, we will just talk about things that happen, because that's, the movie happens in a very disjointed way.
It does.
And so it's...
So, yeah, I guess...
The basic...
Summarize,
The basic summary is that Hunter S. Thompson has been hired to write a journalist story for a sports magazine
about... Sports Illustrated, though they never say it.
Yeah, they call it something else. But it's about a dirt bike race in the middle of the desert in Las Vegas.
Yep.
So he goes out there, and that's where, that's really all we know.
With his attorney.
Yes.
Which I, maybe I'm an idiot, but I never understood why the attorney was with him. And I've seen this movie like four or five times now.
The attorney
expressly state this? Why he's there?
He comes into play a lot more in Hunter S.'s writings and works. He was a good friend of his.
Like, yeah, that's what I get.
But he was also
just,
he is an attorney, and he was his attorney, and it hit you hard.
Bubble.
Yeah. We're into a second champagne.
It's not Andre, and it is offensive to my mouth.
Yeah, yeah, it'll fuck you up. I had the same problem, man. I totally did.
Bubbles.
Totally burned you. So,
we're having a fear and loathing experience right here.
So it's his attorney. They're just, it's a camaraderie. They both enjoy getting as fucked up as possible, and that's where a lot of the friendship is based in.
Which I think we should real quick say, Hunter S. Thompson, and that's not his character's name in this movie, but it is his surrogate pretty much, is played by Johnny Depp.
This is his best acting, I think.
I think it's one of his best. I don't know if I could put that as
And the reason I say that is because even still watching it last night, there are times when it's like, that is not Johnny Depp on the screen. He is totally absorbed into Hunter S. Thompson. He is totally encapsulating that.
But I feel like you could say that about so many of his other works, too. Like, that's not unusual for him.
When I see, like, Captain Jack Sparrow, I'm like, oh, that's Johnny Depp in a dreadlock wig. When I see...
Maybe.
I could give it to you with Edward Scissorhands, but even
No, I would go with Ed Wood. I think Ed Wood's his best performance.
Yeah. I would disagree. Ed Wood is good, but I think this is it.
Okay.
Because
to disagree, but this is in the tops. Like, this is one of his best performances.
Even physically, like, looking at him, it does not look like Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Ever.
No, it looks like Hunter S. Thompson. It looks like how you would picture him.
It's so fucking weird to see that, and I love that I can watch this movie and not be thinking, oh, here's Johnny Depp doing this. I'm like, this is a character. This is a complete character. So
And then the attorney is played by Benicio Del Toro,
who,
in another phenomenal performance, like one of his best.
Dude, he kills it. And not only that, he packed on this real weight. He's one of those guys. I love an actor who does that.
And it's so funny, like, whenever, like, in Raging Bull and American Hustle and in this movie, like, if a male character packs on weight, there are so many fucking camera angles that are centered around that belly poking out.
On that
out.
Belly, man.
And I'm just like, I get it. I get it. Let's move on. Like, I don't need another shot of this guy's belly overhang. Like, they do it so often.
Last night watching it was maybe one of only three times. And I was drinking last night just to get on a level. But I had not seen this movie sober.
Yeah.
Almost ever. I have always seen it on some sort of fucked up.
I think I've only seen this movie sober.
That might be a problem.
That I think could be a big problem.
I've seen this on a lot of different substances.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mom.
But
almost
true confessions with Kyle.
Oh my god, man. And it's weird because when you do watch it on different, like, you, it gives you different things. It's one of those weird movies in that sense. Like, watching it drunk last night, I was a lot more giddy and more happy and just kind of pulling in on that.
Oh,
thing.
I imagine if you're tripping and watching this movie, you'd be horrified.
Dude, it's some weird
just
things.
Just like they are in the movie.
A lot of, when I did eat mushrooms and watch this movie, and a lot of things from the screen bled out into the real world, which I know weren't happening, but that totally was happening, and it was fucking weird, man. Walls were melting, things of that nature. So it's an experience.
I'm going to use that as a segue. Walls melting. So I talked about, like, the narrative shortcomings, because there's really no story like that.
It's very disjointed. That's a note.
The basic summary, Kyle said, like, that's all you're really going to get. You're not going to get, like, character arcs or anything, really.
No.
It's about this trip that these two guys on. It's a double entendre. But The thing I love about this movie, and this is why I can absolutely see why it's on somebody's top five. It would never be on my top five because I do have issues with the narrative, and I don't think it's like the most solid movie. But I can see why people love it because the visuals are amazing.
Yeah,
Terry Gilliam knocked out of the park.
And it is Terry Gilliam who's like, I cannot believe where that dude has come from and all the fucking crazy weird, yeah, all these crazy weird movies this dude does. But man,
yeah. And this is his best. This is easily his best.
I would agree
movie.
Too. Brazil is very good.
Yes.
But I think Fear and Loathing is the best.
I agree. And it's the visuals. Like you were talking about, like things bleeding out of the TV. Like you see visual representations of that when they're tripping in these casinos. Like,
yeah.
I think my favorite visual was like a very subtle one where Hunter, I'm just going to call him Hunter S. Thompson. That's not his fucking name.
It's Raoul Duke in the
movie.
That's
what it is. Thank you. So he's like looking at other people in the casino. And he's looking down at the floor at their feet. And the print of the carpet slowly starts to creep up on their legs. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, that's a fucking great touch. And it's like one of those early 90s or early 2000s, late 90s CG effects that like still holds up and it looks
What's crazy,
fucking
yeah,
good.
It's insane. There's a lot of CG in this movie. But unlike the Star Wars prequels, which we watched earlier today, none of it is jarring and pulls you out of the movie. It is all done so well that it adds to the story. At no point is it distracting other than the fact that it is fucked up things happening that are...
It's just weird.
You're
acknowledging
that.
That's
but
the only
never
thing
like,
that's jarring.
Oh, that looks fake. Well, yeah, it does look fake, but it's because he's tripping out of his mind on sunshine acid.
There's a
point.
Lot of CG and practical, like the lizard people. He starts costumes. To see people become lizards in like this crowded like.
Somebody's
casino
getting
row.
Booze to these goddamn animals. Yes. I'm telling you, I could quote almost every part of this. I fucking love this movie.
So I'm gonna completely butcher this line, but this is one that I completely forgot about that caught me off guard, and I laughed for like a good 5 minutes. Was Benicio del Toro at the circus? He says something to, like, just a random passerby. He's like, they pay you to fuck that sheep or something? Like,
So they're drunk. I'll save you here. So they're at the bar.
Please do.
They're drunk and they're fucked up on ether. And Benicio del Toro's getting sick and he's starting to worry and he's getting very distracted. And Hunter S. Thompson says, hey, look, that chick over there is fucking a bear.
That's what it is.
And then this lady comes up and tries to light his cigarette, and he's like, they pay you to fuck that bear over there? She's like, what? What did he just fucking say to me? And then he has to get him out of the bar. But yeah,
I'm dying right now.
It's such a good line.
And like, oh man,
this movie is full of great lines.
It is. And this is why I say this is like an experience movie. Like, one of my points is, like, what is the meaning of this movie? I don't know if there is.
There is not.
I think it's just about the journey.
And that was one of the things I wrote down. It's like, I told you earlier, and I'll say it again, I have no idea how this movie got made.
I have no idea how it got made.
I really, I cannot believe this movie exists. And I think people should see it based on just that alone. Like, This movie exists.
You will never see anything like
this
movie.
No, you will absolutely not. I cannot believe this was made and funded by a major Hollywood studio and with all the big name actors that it has in it. The two leading actors are Johnny fucking Depp and Benicio del Toro, and they're in almost every scene of this movie.
Yeah.
And they fucking rock it. They are a great duo. I liked the duo earlier in your Kiss Kiss Bang Bang of Downey and... Val Kilmer. Dude, I think Depp and Benicio blow them out of the fucking water, though. Like, their chemistry in this movie is phenomenal, the way they play off of each other. Like, because there are times when, like, they're friends, but at times they don't like each other in the movie, and you really pick up on that. And Benicio especially is very unhinged and an untrustworthy character, and there are issues where, like, the shooting style and the way they're presenting it is frightening to
a sense. And that's why I'd relent and say, like, yeah, they might be the better pairing, but personally, my taste, like, I like that buddy cop comedy
that
Val Kilmer and
I'm just
Robert
saying,
Jr.
Specifically the way the actors play off of each other. Downey and Val were fantastic, and I think Depp and Benicio are, like, four steps even above that.
I agree with that. I think they are better. They are both better in the roles, but it's just I prefer the other thing more than this.
Yeah,
because
you're talking
about like when they go against each other, and it's like you said, like it's a lot of fun, and then it's jarring at points.
It'll
and
jar
it,
you.
It's like
And then they come back.
It's kind of
like,
how it is when you're drinking or like doing stuff with other people. Like yeah, it can take bad
really
turns,
weird turns,
and they are not afraid to show those bad turns in this movie. To the point of like he wants to be electrocuted and killed at the peak of White Rabbit, which is such a fucking absurdly like minute detail that it's like this has happened to Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like this is something that has happened, and like I would have loved to have been in that room and see this happen.
There's just, I love, like, most of the movie is narrated by Johnny Depp. It's a lot of voiceover and him explaining things, and then they come into those things.
Yeah.
But what happens a lot of time is that it starts off as a narration and picks up with Johnny Depp saying the line in the actual movie. So it flows from a narration into the speaking, and then it oftentimes comes back into a narration. And I love that weird flow. It also gives it that weird disjointed, unconnected sense of reality that...
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It does.
Scott Pilgrim, I think a big part of that is all of the After Effects editing. Like,
mm-hmm.
I really respect directors that take on things of this scale and make it work.
Because
I could never imagine how that is possible.
Yeah. As good as Depp and Del Toro are in this movie, they are... overshadowed by Gilliam's direction.
Yeah.
And like they are fantastic, but it's the direction. Like it's so good. Just the visuals, the creativity, like, and that's, there you go. Like that's our connection, is I think just like the director's love and passion for the source material. Because I'm not familiar with Hunter S. Thompson's writings, but
I read a lot after.
I would say this
after this movie.
This
because
feels
I got,
authentic.
It's very. Even, it's pretty true to form. I don't know if you've ever seen. There was a Bill Murray movie made.
I've seen a lot of Bill Murray movies.
It's called Where the Buffalo Roam. That he plays Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, I have not seen
and
that.
And the dad from Everybody Loves Raymond is playing the role of Benicio del Toro. He plays the attorney.
That's interesting.
It's not good. It's really like.
Is that a newer one?
No. It was like one of Bill Murray's first role. It was really early, early on.
You say Buffalo Roam, and all I think about is Buffalo Bill.
Yeah, but it's something that person. Maybe you know. Again, you know, this is all this podcast is about. I think that's one maybe we should watch, maybe even together, because it's weird to go from the amazingness of this movie and then to see that. And it just feels like such a cheap knockoff, even though it was made first and made well before.
Yeah.
But like Bill Murray's performance of Thompson, and I love Bill Murray, but this feels just so cheap and like dime store and tacky, and it's really weird.
Ugh.
And I think you should see it, though, just to see the differences and how this movie, because after reading a lot of Thompson and experiencing that, like, this movie is so much more in line with it. It gets what he is pushing forth. And Hunter S. Thompson is in this movie. I don't know if
I wrote it down. It took me a second because my notes are batshit stupid writtenly down. But I said in the Matrix Club, there's a, there I was, there I am.
Holy shit,
fuck.
There I am.
Holy fuck.
Yeah.
And like, so Johnny Depp as Hunter S. Thompson looks over and he sees Hunter S. Thompson, like at this table. And I was like, it's one of those moments that's so meta and like.
It's meta.
Really, like,
it's surreal. This entire movie is so surreal.
You put anything like that in a movie, you got me. You got me.
And then he gets walked in, or Flea is in the bathroom, Flea from the Red Hot Chili
Peppers. That's the weirdest fucking scene, but, like, I love the end of it. Like, a guy walks in on Flea sniffing some coke off of Johnny
Depp.
It's
LSD. He's licking the LSD.
That's right. He's licking the coat sleeve. Mm-hmm. And this guy comes in, and he's just terrified. He has to pee. And he runs away, and I think Hunter S. Thompson says something to the effect of, like...
It's a great scene, because he says...
Do it.
You know... For the rest of his life,
he'll
constantly wonder if there are men on the other side of the door who's experienced things he'll never know. And it's so, like, just bleak, and it hits home for a lot of dudes that, like, you know, they don't go out of a realm. They don't push themselves. This movie is about pushing yourself mentally via the assistance of drugs.
Sometimes
too
far, because
way too
there
far,
are
a lot.
bad trips in this movie.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love that scene.
It's like, what's the drug that he does before Benicio del Toro turns into like the demon with the tits on his back?
That's adrenochrome. That is
the adrenaline stuff. Yeah.
You can only get from a living human. You can get it from their adrenaline gland, and he got it from a Satanist freak that got caught.
That's right. Yeah. Pedophiling. So that's yep. Yeah. That's like one of the bad trips.
You name a section, I will break down nice. That section. I've seen like this that. Movie so many I times, like that. Man. So, one of my favorite. I want to throw this in.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm kind of taking control here, but I
go
can't
ahead. This
I,
is your movie.
Well, and thinking about this too, I think we should do a revisit because watching it last night, I was like, man, I think this might be moving up my list. I really, really do. Like, I like this movie so much, but
I don't think it should. But
we were talking again. I'm going to give away a lot of our upcoming Star Wars things, but I said, you know, because of Star Wars Episode One, I say the words Roger, Roger a lot when people
Roger,
ask
Roger.
Me to do things. I'm always like, yeah, Roger, 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 Roger. And nobody gets it. Another thing that I do based on this movie, if something bad happens, even, you know, if I'm trying to be funny, I'll always say, goddamn, what a bummer, which is a phrase that Benicio drops and his delivery. Yeah. And I say that all the time and nobody knows what I'm talking about.
The Benicio God del Toro deliverance and performance in this movie is it's like that Sin City scene with him as the decapitated head.
Yeah,
I think it's directly influenced from his performance here.
It's so
similar, and they're both fantastic.
And like Depp has
those hookers screwed you over.
I love that. All I think Depp's really quirky mannerisms sell it in this movie. Like, and you can see hints of Jack Sparrow, what he does.
Yeah.
And some of the things he does, especially when he's really tripping.
There are a lot of camera angles or shots of like him tripping in public.
And he's like doing weird things with his arms.
Contorting his body and just like walking weirdly. Well, and that's, all right, so I feel like it's been a love fest. I'm going to bring it on down.
Bring it on down. I'll contradict these maybe.
Yeah,
but
you probably will. Speaking negatively, and I think this is an issue probably with Hunter S. Thompson. So like I can't fault the film because it is that source material to a T. But I feel like this movie is like, unless you're fucking drunk or tripping while watching it, you are the sober person watching somebody else's trip, which can be fun, but at times it's just like, it could be too much. And I think
that is, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I will absolutely give you that. And I cannot go on record and condone anything, but do not see this movie sober.
Yeah, and like I said, I've only seen this movie sober, which is
get drunk,
why I have issues.
Smoke weed, eat shrooms, snort coke,
something. We don't condone any of this.
But it is.
But seriously, smoke some coke. I don't think you smoke coke.
You can, and then it becomes crack.
This is how little I know about drugs.
Then you have this whole other problem. But I totally understand what you're saying there. And I have seen this movie sober, and it is incredibly hard to even. When you are fucked up on any sort of substance, you can relate to things in the movie, and it brings it to a real face. And
yeah,
so I think I get what you're saying.
When that happens, like when I watch movies like that, like you get connected to a scene, like moments, and you don't think of like the overarching narrative. Like you don't think of the connective tissues, because I don't think there are connective tissues in this movie. This is a movie of moments, and there are some fantastic moments. But then I think there's also moments where like Hunter S. Thompson, his dialogue is very hit and miss. It's very verbose. And I think it's like the type of writing you read more than once. So in a movie, you don't have that time to digest that heavy language he uses.
I've seen this movie so many times. So I come to it from that, like I
get
what is going, but I can totally see that too. You will not like this movie the first time you see it. I will come out and say that now. Even if you are fucked up, you might enjoy it, but you'll be like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. And a lot of our movies, I think, aside from like maybe Pan's Labyrinth, because you have to look because it's subtitles, you could watch a lot of our favorites like in the background and they're still just as effective. You cannot do that for this movie.
You're gonna miss a whole lot.
Like I said, that language is so dense. You have to like really pay attention, because his turn of phrase is just so eloquent
and
yet like obscured. Like it's hard. Like it's rich with meaning. So like I don't want to like shit on it, but it's also like because it's so rich and like so quickly delivered, like it's hard to keep up sometimes.
Yeah. Again, you know, this is a movie. I love this movie. It's one of my favorites. I've tried to expose people to it. Mm-hmm. And I get the same response every time I've shown new people this. They're like, what? I don't get, what is, why do you like this movie? Like,
see, and that's, I can't understand that mindset. Like, I don't agree with you. I this would not be in a top list of any kind, unless you're like talking about top 10 drug movies, and which is up there for sure. Just like, everything about this movie screams like art. Like, whether it connects with you or not, this movie is art.
And absolutely, yeah.
Like, I don't think you can not see that. Like, the camera angles are so weird and uncomfortable. The close-ups are just, like, not what you'd expect. Like, it's like you would usually see, like, a person from, like, the head down to make them kind of look flattering. But you see, like, lower angles looking at somebody's chins. Or, like I said, Benicio Del Toro's belly overhanging.
I will.
Like, it's just, it's uncomfortable and unnerving. And, like, it's done that way on purpose. It's fucking art.
Expanding on that to a sense, as disjointed and unconnected as the movie is, everything that you see, you are meant to see. Everything is there for a purpose and to tell you something. There is nothing in this movie that is fat or not. It's not there to pad anything. You are meant to see everything that Terry Gilliam wants to show you. For whatever reason, that's why it's there.
Justify Christina Ricci's existence in this movie. I think she's a needless plot.
Christina Ricci is there to bring not only Benicio Del Toro back, because he has left, and he comes back and he has her with him.
But I think you could argue that you could bring him back with any random plot.
I do agree, but she's also there to give them, because she's underage and Benicio has slept with her, and she brings that conflict in that she makes Hunter uncomfortable because he's also feeding her drugs and she's very, very religious.
But they kind of get rid of her real quick.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think that's fat then. Like, you have this 5-minute scene where she's in the hotel, and then real quick, Hunter S. Thompson, like you said, is uncomfortable. Is like, you need to get rid of the girl. Just imagine this, this, and this will happen. And Benicio does. And then that's it. I think she does come back later, but, like, it's nothing important. So you, and this is where we disagree then, because you say there's no fat. I think this movie is entirely fat. Like, because there is no,
I mean that in the sense of, like, in the fact, he's not showing you. If they're walking somewhere, it's for, like, something is going on there. He's showing you something.
I agree. He's showing you something, but I would also say, because there's no strict narrative, you could take out any scene in this movie, and it would be just the same.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't lose anything either. So it's weird. It's this weird, it's a weird fucking movie. I don't know if this came across yet, but it's a weird fucking
movie.
That's
the best description. I mean, it is fucking weird. It's odd.
Yeah.
How did this movie get made with the money and the funding and the actors that it has?
Which we haven't talked about everybody who pops
Gary
up, but like
Busey's in
Gary
this
Busey
movie.
As a gay cop who solicits
Can
Hunter S. Thompson for
just
sex,
a little
possibly?
Kiss. I get so lonely.
To let him go off of drunk driving / whatever.
Make the bastard chase you. He
Tobey
will chase
McGuire
you.
And like Tobey the McGuire? Creepiest he's ever been. Like, what a weird looking, that blonde balding wig look. Yep. Ugh.
It's got Christina Ricci.
Christina Ricci, which we mentioned. Christopher Maloney from Wet Hot American Summer, and I think he's like in Law and Order now. Oh, I love him as like the gay bellhop.
From Penn and Teller.
Penn Jillette, shows up. Yeah, real quick.
And a lot of bit character actors that you see and like you look at them and you're like, oh, that guy. Or, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
They also show up. And I think because it's Terry Gilliam, a lot of them were involved in that. Like, Terry Gilliam's one of those people that, like, when he does a movie, everybody's like, oh, I want to work with Terry Gilliam. I don't care. So I think it's one of those things. A young, what is her fucking name? And she's usually terrible in everything, but I liked her in this. The blonde reporter.
Oh, it's Cameron Diaz.
Cameron Diaz. Thank you.
Yeah Cameron Diaz. I completely forgot about her.
Yeah,
I forgot she was in it.
She's very forgettable. It's not a big part, but it's there.
It's a very small part with Benicio Del Toro in an elevator and like a very uncomfortable, almost rape scene.
Again,
which happens. Which I guess this is the first time I picked up on this because, again, I'm fucking dumb and I just never listened to this movie. He was in Vietnam. And
who?
Benicio Del Toro was in Vietnam, apparently.
No, he was never in Nam.
They talk about him being in Nam and like experiencing shit. And that's why he like does the shit with the waitress at the very end.
I never picked up on that.
I really feel like, and maybe I misheard, but I felt like I heard a line this time that referenced that he was in the Vietnam War and he experienced shit. And that's
why they talk
why
about
he's
Vietnam a lot, and this is a very post-Vietnam movie.
And I think it opens up with Vietnam footage on a TV screen, or
they're
what is
playing,
it?
They're playing the song from Sound of Music Raindrops on roses, yes, and warm to like, woman mitt.
But it's war really footage weird. Or TV yeah, footage or protesting footage and, or. Yeah.
But.
Which, let's talk about. All right, because I'm not done talking about this movie. I could still talk some more. Cool. The soundtrack is fucking amazing.
It's very 60s, 70s.
We already mentioned like White Rabbit. Like, there's a bunch of Jefferson Airplane in this. I love it. There's just such. It's such a killer soundtrack.
Yeah. Everything is on point in this movie.
It
like
is.
And again, it's so weird that it is so niche because there it are is. So many fucking fantastic elements to this. But again,
there's,
be it's, fucked up to see it.
I like I said, I think it's for a very specific crowd. Much like Scott Pilgrim. And you said our movies are very different, and they are, but they're also oddly similar.
Yeah, it's weird. And totally opposite ends of the spectrum. They occupy similar themes. So.
Yeah, but it is like, again, first 5 minutes you put this in. If you're on board, you're on board. And I would even say push through, because like I said, like I originally did not like this movie, and I've come to enjoy it.
If anybody watches this movie based on our recommendation, I'm telling you, you will not like it the very first time you see it. Even more than Scott Pilgrim, I feel this movie, you will see new things every time you watch it. Every time you will pick up on a new line of dialogue set in the background, a new visual here, something that is connecting that. And it's not so rich on the callbacks, but things referenced that happen.
I think the script is pretty brilliant in Scott Pilgrim, whereas this one's all about the direction.
The direction and the performance.
And the performances. Yeah, but really, like, Terry Gilliam, his direction trumps Johnny Depp and Benicio del Toro. They're just so many creative visuals. And
this is my favorite Depp movie.
Storytelling.
Depp is fucking amazing in this movie.
I agree. I don't disagree with that. And I'm not the biggest Depp fan.
I like him a lot, but yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah. And I guess I'll say real quick before we wrap this up, because I feel like that wrap up's coming.
Yeah, we're good.
Avenged Sevenfold. I didn't know, and this is the first time I piece this together when I watched this last night.
A Man Who Makes a Beast of Himself
gets rid of the pain of being a man by Dr. Johnson. This is the opening quote that starts this movie. Mm-hmm. I never piece this together, but that's how an Avenged Sevenfold song starts. And the backcountry stuff is Avenged Sevenfold. I'm an idiot.
I'm not really. I like Avenged Sevenfold. I like metal.
I liked that backcountry album when
I
it came
that
out.
One a lot. It's
and
a,
then
it's a really fun album.
Since.
It's a really fun album, and a lot of things on that album are referential to this movie.
Which
they are also
I never
big fans
up
of
because you,
so you should listen to
I'm
that album
dummy.
Now.
I should,
especially that song, "Man Who Makes a Beast of Himself Gets Rid of the Pain of Being a Man." Almost all of that song is somehow referential to Fear and Loathing. So.
Interesting. I will
stuff.
Have to go back and do that.
It's a good piece to come in on. Maybe we can talk about it on a later episode.
Yeah. Experience Grind is going to branch out from movies and video games.
So, do you recommend this movie?
This is a hard one.
Yeah.
Because, like, I would say, like, would you recommend Scott Pilgrim? And,
I would recommend Scott Pilgrim. But, yeah, there are asterisks.
I would recommend this based solely on the visuals. I don't think it's as cohesive as a movie as your other choices. I feel like from your top five, this is my least favorite of your top five.
Wow, okay.
And so it's interesting that you say you're going to put it, like, higher up.
I really think I will.
God, no, like, no. Drive, Punch Drunk Love, Pan's Labyrinth, and Matrix,
I think
are all much better movies.
I think we should watch this movie together, and you will see giddiness that I bring. God, dude,
I think that would help, too.
I am
yeah.
so enwrapped in this movie.
When you watch movies with people who love that movie, like, it is contagious.
Yeah.
I think that would carry over.
Yeah, so.
But, yeah, I would recommend it based solely on the visuals, but, like.
It is art.
It's
very art house.
It is. It doesn't. I would almost say like a Tree of Life. Like it's arty, and it's not going to be for everyone.
But
if you're a movie fan, if you're a cinephile, like, you're going to like this. You're going to find things to like.
Let me put that asterisk. It's arty, but it is no way up its own ass ever.
No, because I don't think it cares about being
exactly.
up its own ass. Yeah,
exactly.
it's just doing what it wants.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. So.
But in doing that, it is art. It is an arty film, and it's not a bad thing, but it's not going to be
weird.
For everybody.
It is weird. We will end on it is a weird fucking
it's
movie.
Fucking so. Weird.
So there we go.
Hey!
That's Fear and Loathing, everybody.
It's Fear and Loathing.
And Scott Pilgrim. They are two drastically different, extremely similar movies.
I like that.
Yeah. I just came up with that off the top of the old headpiece there.
You did, and it rolled off the tongue so nicely.
Yeah, hey. Thank you, Andre. Champagne.
Andre Champagne.
You're bringing that together.
Yeah, Blaisen de Burgog. I don't like how your bubbles made my nose hurt.
It did fuck him up. It was pretty funny. I watched it. So
I did not like that.
Thank you guys for listening. This was a... if you listen to this episode, it was a bit of a grind. It was episode 7. We did kind of ramble, but it's good. I don't care about length anymore. You don't have to listen as much as we're talking.
That's true. If we bore you and it's an hour and a half, then
guess what? You can fucking turn it off.
Holy
shit. Don't get up on my ass about it. So
get off that ass.
We're gonna end here. This is episode 7. It's been a great time. I loved talking about both these movies with you.
Yeah, so please check us out at experiencegrind.com. Look at us on Facebook at Experience Grind. Please leave us a message. Review us. Talk about the movies we're talking about. Talk about the games. We want to hear from you. We want to write to you. We want to experience us experiencing you.
We want to, you know, if you have stuff you want us to experience, there is plans in the very near future to set up a P.O. box to people that can mail us things, anything.
Yeah.
If you have something we don't have and you want us to go through it, do it. Reach out to us, please.
Open confession time. We want to continue this.
Yeah, we want to keep doing it.
We're having trouble thinking about games to experience. So if you have games, please let us know what you want us to talk about, because we are wide open.
I think we got some. We don't have.
We have ideas.
Yeah. So,
but we are wide open.
We'll probably throw it out to you people, but please reach the fuck out to us. And I cannot stress enough: if you listen to us on iTunes, come on, be cool and throw us a review on iTunes. Yeah. I'm not asking for a 5-star.
We're not asking for a 4-star.
Just throw us something, because I can't even see the reviews that have been made until a set number have been put in.
Just write 1-star. Yeah. Your dicks.
This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Nobody should listen. That's fine.
Please.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Just do something so that things start to move in that way. And we're going to end there.
You've made us desperate.
We're going to shut the fuck up. Thank you guys for listening. We are Experience Grind Podcast. I am Kyle.
And I am Ryan.
Thank you. Good night.